I think about that a lot. And I think that that's what difficult moments in our lives, rejection, criticism, failure, et cetera, is trying to show us. It's trying to show us, you know, you are a human being. You are a miracle. You are, I mean, whatever your spiritual philosophy is, like you are made from the same carbon that is in the stars in the sky. You are incredible. And there is something inside of you, inside of your heart, your gut, your spirit, that is strong enough to overcome anything, including, you know, struggling to find a client by Friday or whatever.
Welcome to the Cubicle Revolution. This is a podcast about finding another way. It's about redefining success, finding the courage to follow that inner whisper, and creating a career path that speaks wildly to the deepest parts of your soul. For the successful but unfulfilled, the yearning but bored, the stressed out, over-caffeinated, desperate for more kind of person. If you're wondering how you got here and how to get out, put your headphones on and press play. I'm your host, Candace Carlton. Let's get started.
When you're creating another way, building your own path, you're going to come up against radical failure, self-doubt, and sometimes crushing fear that makes you stand still and wonder what the F you're doing. I know I've been there. I wanted to interview Alexandra Franzen because she's the epitome of creating another way. Her writing style is epic. It's vulnerable, authentic, and yet so uplifting and empowering. I actually look forward to her newsletters every week. Her writing style has been featured in places like Time, Forbes, Newsweek, The Huffington Post, and Life Hacker. She caught my attention when I found out she worked with Danielle Laporte, one of my favorite writers. Alexandra wrote a book all about failure and surviving it, using real stories of people she knows. We discuss why reading these stories and sharing our own stories of failure is so weirdly uplifting, and what she noticed about people who used failure as fuel. This is an excellent episode if you're finding another way, if you've come up against some epic walls and failure, and maybe you're in the dip. If you love the episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe for even more goodness to your inbox from the Cubicle Revolution.
You gather true stories from people about failure, rejection, even public humiliation, especially in the world of work, because I think we're so defined by our success in work that when we come up against failures, it can be particularly devastating. Can you talk a little bit about why you wrote that book and what was going on?
It was inspired by, you know, a series of experiences in my own life and career where I bumped up against rejection, criticism, failure, you know, however you want to define that word, failure, terrible Yelp reviews, terrible Amazon reviews, like a lot of experiences. And each one rattled my confidence, you know, as these things do. And even though I like to think of myself as like a strong, positive person, and I usually am, the truth is that when we're going through something tough in our lives or careers, it's hard, you know, it's hard. Life can be hard at times. And what I've found to be true for me personally is that when I'm going through one of those rough moments, whether it's just a rough, you know, day or a rough month or a rough season or year, what I kind of initially want to do is just retreat into my little introvert cave and kind of hide. But what is actually helpful and healing for me to do is the opposite. It's not to recoil into my cave and isolate and shut down. It's to reach out and connect with other people and ask for help and ask for support and ask for a pep talk or a hug or a story. And so I wanted to write this book, You're Going to Survive. My hope was always like that if someone was having a rough day at work, in their business, whatever, that they could just have this book on their bedside table or their office desk, almost like a little friend, you know, and like pick up the book and flip to a story or two and just and get that feeling that you get when a good friend texts you and says, you're going to be okay. You know, you're not the first person to go through this. You won't be the last. You're going to survive. You're smart. You're resourceful. You're capable. You're resilient. It sucks right now, but it won't always feel this way. You're going to survive. And I kind of wanted my book to feel like
to feel like the way that feels, you know, because I feel like we all need to hear those words at some
right.
point or another.
And so, you know, that was one of my questions, because it's so interesting. It's like, why is the exploration of failure and like reading other people's stories so uplifting?
I know it is, isn't it? You know, I think it's that, I'm sure there's probably like smart researchers who study this type of thing, but my personal sense is that when you're going through a rough moment, you feel shame. You might feel shame, mm-hmm. you might feel embarrassment, you might feel guilt. I personally go into like a self-critical spiral where it's like, you know, it's all my fault. I messed this up. I ruined everything. You know, even if it's not really my fault, like I make it my fault.
Right.
So you just start feeling so bad about yourself and you sort of, it's almost like your mind goes to this place of like, everyone else is great. Everyone else has figured their life out. I'm the failure. Like I'm different and I'm bad and I'm wrong is kind of like the sort of very primal gut feeling place that maybe our minds go. And so, yeah, when you hear stories from other people, true stories about experiences they've gone through, where maybe they made a huge embarrassing mistake, or maybe they were publicly humiliated, or maybe they were, you know, had a product launch that failed or whatever. When you hear those stories, it immediately makes you go, oh, I'm not the only one.
I'm not the only one. And I know, when we talk about the like main ingredient, I love that you hit on it. Brené Brown talks a lot about shame, yeah. and she talks about the essential ingredient, like the most critical ingredient for shame is keeping things a secret. Mm-hmm. So it's that like, you know, you keep it a secret, it's so bad, but then when you open the lid on it and you start to share and talk about it, it's kind of like shame no longer has a chance of surviving. So I think that's also part of it. Yeah.
It's so true. And what's really interesting is that I've noticed, you know, even in the process of writing this book, because I interviewed lots of people to collect their stories, and but also just around the dinner table or at, you know, workshops, events, whatever. It's so interesting because when even just one person kind of opens the lid, as you just put it, and shares something vulnerable or shares something real or shares a tough thing that they're going through or that they've been through, it's like as soon as one person does it, then suddenly everyone is chiming in. Oh my gosh, me too. Oh my gosh, I have a story. Oh my gosh, I've been there. And suddenly it's the blanket of shame is lifted and everyone feels better.
And we feel more connected to each other, right?
Right.
It's the
That's
sense
right.
of like we're all having a similar experience, even though the details may be different.
Yeah, so true.
So true. So when you look at these stories, what do you think is the common thought or belief of those people that are able to use the failure as fuel, as a way to learn, to get up and go? Like they have a certain resilience to push through or to be better. When you were interviewing everyone for your book, or when people talk to you about it later,
I would say what was very striking to me as I was writing You're Going to Survive and interviewing people from all walks of life. I mean, I interviewed Broadway performers and opera singers and graphic designers and lawyers and, you know, nonprofit directors. Like I really tried to get a big wide range of different ages and genders and, you know, types of professions. And so it was interesting that everyone's story was different. You know, everyone had gone through a different type of disaster in their own way. And everyone coped with it in their own way. You know, some people used humor. Some people just found a way to find the spark of humor in a very bleak situation and even created like an inside joke with their friends about it. And that helped them to survive. And then other people turned to community. They turned to their tribe. You know, they immediately reached out to loved ones for support, and that's how they coped with it. And other people, you know, relied on mental health counseling, therapy, life coaching, you know, seeking guidance from professionals, and everything else you can imagine. I mean, everyone kind of has to come up with their own personal toolkit, I think, for dealing with tough moments. But that being said, you know, if I were to point to kind of an overall theme or a, you know, a recurring theme that people seem to share, you know, it's almost like all the people I interviewed, there was this deep and I don't know if they would even put this into words in exactly this way, but this is what it felt like to me. It's like, no matter what was going on in their life, no matter how bleak things seemed, you know, they'd just been fired from their dream job, they were down to their last $5, you know, whatever it was almost like there was this little voice inside that was just saying, like, this isn't over yet, you know, your story's not over yet. And even though it sucks right now, you are, like, you will see the other side of this. It was almost like they had this quiet belief, even if that voice was so quiet and so tiny at times, it was there and they believed it. And it enabled them to, you know, take that next little step forward, whatever that may be. It reminds me of, there's this rapper I love, Andy Mineo, and he has a song that just goes, I ain't done. And that's kind of, it's like that feeling. I ain't done. As long as there's breath in my lungs, I ain't done.
I ain't done.
Yeah.
It's so funny because, and you know, and then there's sometimes I felt in my own life that certain failures or doors being closed, when I look back on it, I'm like, well, I'm kind of glad that happened because it made me go in a different direction.
Yes. And there was one story. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you mentioned that because there's one story in particular from the book that I think about all the time. And it came from my friend Robert. And Robert is a singer, actor, dancer, choreographer, Broadway performer. And he's had a magnificent career on Broadway. He's been in, you know, 7 or 8 different shows. But this particular story was from relatively early in his career when he had a moment where he thought that he was going to be cast in a new Broadway show. And it was like, you know, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. It was an all-star cast, you know, Tony Award-winning producers. He was obsessed with everyone who was involved with the project. You know, this would have been like a breakthrough moment for him. And he worked so, so hard. I mean, he was explaining the Broadway audition process to me. And it's not just like you go audition once and then you're cast or you're not. Like, many times it is a multi-month long process of workshopping the show and then auditioning and then another round of auditioning and then a final round of, and it's like it goes on and on and on and on, and you're working and working and working for weeks and weeks or months and months just to see if you might get cast in the show when it goes to Broadway. So he went through that whole process, and then at the very end he didn't get the job, and he was just absolutely devastated. And what's interesting, though, is that, you know, in that moment, this felt like the worst, most crushing rejection he could imagine. And he was so miserable about it. And he was crying and he called his mom. And I mean, it was just like a nightmare. But then that show, the show that he wanted to get cast in so badly, it opened on Broadway and it was a failure. It closed after just a few weeks, I think, or weeks or months. And then he had this realization, because he ended up getting another job shortly thereafter. And he had this realization of, oh my God, if I had gotten my wish, like if I had gotten what I wanted and gotten cast in that show, I would be unemployed right now.
Right.
Yeah. And that, it's like that story sticks in my mind so vividly because it is so interesting to consider, wow, sometimes getting what you want might actually be the worst thing for you. And something better might be just around the corner and you just can't see it quite yet.
But right.
It's beautiful to remember that.
Right. I think so. You know, I've had experiences in my life where I have pushed my way into things. You know, there hasn't been that gentle flow of just allowing. And I've pushed myself and forced myself into jobs. Mm-hmm. And then they were not a good fit for me. I hated them. I remember a PR company I went to, I like had been talking to them for months. I was convinced this was my job. They weren't hiring me. They were taking a long, long time. Mm. And so I was so persistent because I was so, I just decided this was my job. And I knew on day one of getting in there that this was not going to work.
Oh no.
I told my best friend in London, I said, how long do I have to stay here? And she said, you have to give it 2 weeks. And I said, okay. And I honestly, I don't even think I lasted the 2 weeks. And what I learned from that is if doors aren't opening with a certain feeling, then maybe they're not the doors for you. And so
maybe. Okay. So I have some questions. I'm just curious. So First of all, what was it about this particular job that made you so vigorously, you know, go for it? And then secondly, what was it about that job that immediately gave you that feeling of, oh no, this isn't right?
Right. So I was at the time, I just finished college and I was working in Nordstrom, and it was a PR company. And so I was always really good at communications, and I was head of the debate and public speaking team. So I decided that communications was the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then, so that was number one. And then number two, they were very mission driven. So they were all about only taking on clients that made a positive impact in the world. So I was very passionate about that. So I decided in my mind that this would be a perfect fit for me. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think I was paying attention to what the job actually entailed, like the day-to-day of it. And then secondly, the people. I don't think I was as connected in terms of their worldview of, I don't know, there just was a connection there that I had missed, because I knew as soon as I was in the day one and I was working with the people and having conversations, I was like, oh, I don't really, these aren't my people. I just had a sense. I was like, these aren't my people. And then secondly, the work that I had was doing at that time was like reply, like guest posting on blogs as feedback and calling editors to try and get things in the list. And it just felt pointless to me. I just, like, I'm sure there is, it is not pointless, but at the time I felt like, what is this that I'm actually doing? Like, this doesn't feel like it has any impact.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting, because I actually had a very similar experience with my first sort of, you know, quote unquote, real job out of college, where I found a public broadcasting media company that I loved. I loved their radio shows, their podcast. I loved their programming. I loved their mission. You know, they were, it was just like every on paper, just everything I wanted. You know, I want to work for this company and help to play a role in releasing, you know, powerful radio programming. And so I got an internship there, which turned into a job, which turned into another job, which turned into a promotion, et cetera, et cetera. And, but much like you, pretty quickly, although I stayed for several years, but like pretty early on, I began to see, you know, even though I love the mission of this company and I love the art that they produce, my actual job is very tedious and like, and really was just me sitting in a cubicle 8 or 9 hours a day and kind of just like, you know, doing spreadsheets and filling out PDF forms to schedule 30-second, you know, underwriting spots at specific times in the hour of the show. And really a lot of my job was just kind of chasing around other people from other departments to get them to approve various things. Like there were so many approval forms for everything.
Right.
Like I literally just felt like 80% of my job was just like nagging people to remember to approve things. And so it was, you know, it just wasn't right for me. And then after several years, I just noticed even when I look at photos of myself from that time, like it's like the lights drained out of my eyes. I just don't look, I don't look alive. And I think I was just so
I think it's I laugh because it's so funny, because I've been there, I've had friends who've been there, and we look back on it and we're like, God, what were we doing?
Yeah, and you know, I do look back at that time and I don't regret it, because you know, in many ways, it was an exceptional first job out of college. I did learn a great deal. You know, I was proud to be part of an organization that was doing, you know, wonderful work in the space of media and radio and storytelling and all of that. And I learned a lot of valuable lessons, as I'm sure you did too. Number one being, I am just not a cubicle person. I am not a fluorescent overhead lighting person. I am not a 9-to-5 person. And right. And I also really learned that, you know, I want to make art and I want to be able, for the most part, to do it in such a way where I have creative control and I don't need 18 people to sign an approval form to publish something on the internet. You know what I mean? Like I wanted more more efficiency and just more urgency and more just more a sense of that the art is within my own hands. That was really what I was like desperately craving, even though I couldn't quite put that into words back in those days. So yeah, it is interesting how even the tough, you know, chapters of our careers, of course, always teach us so much about ourselves and about what we really want in life.
They really do. And I think for me in that moment, which was really clear, is also like, if people want to work with me, like, it's a party, man. Like, that's where I'm going to thrive. When they're like, yeah, we want her. And I'm like, oh, I love these people. Let's go. Versus pushing and trying to get in and convincing them that I was the right person. Because obviously I wasn't.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I just didn't know it. So, in your mind, what's been your most prolific failure?
My most prolific failure? Oof, that's a good question. Okay. What is my, you know, it's funny. I this may sound like kind of a cliche answer, but I don't really feel like I've had failures because I guess I just don't think of things as failures anymore. I think of them as, you know, experiments or just sort of like learning chapters. I don't really think of anything I've done as like a failure. I will say though, one thing I wish I perhaps had done differently, if I could roll back the clock in time, is, and I think about this a lot actually, when I decided to quit my job at the radio company and become self-employed and become a freelance writer, editor, you know, consultant, content creator, and work for myself, I remember really like that first year or two or three that I was self-employed and, you know, kind of building a clientele and building a name and reputation for myself and hustling really to get clients and get known. I had such a feeling of anxiety all the time about where is my next client, you know, an invoice and paycheck going to come from. And mm-hmm. I spent so much time tethered to my computer. Like I would just kind of hover around my computer all the time doing, I don't even know what, like refreshing my inbox to see if like magically a new client had appeared. Like, I don't know. I just, it really didn't make sense rationally. It was more just this feeling of like, I need to be around just in case, you know? And so when I look back at that time, I'm struck by how in many ways, that first year of starting my freelance business, I had a lot of free time that wasn't full of client work like it is today. And I could have used that time. I could have had a picnic lunch by the river every day. I could have gone to visit my mom and dad. I could have written a novel. I mean, I could have used that time to do so many enriching, beautiful things. And instead I was just kind of like fretting, you know? And so in other words, if I were to go back in time, I do wish that I had been a little more trusting and calm in those early months and years of growing my business instead of just feeling like I had to be plugged in 24/7, because that was a waste of time and energy.
Right. And it's so interesting that you say, like, you know, you had this first gig, you learned a lot from it, there was a lot there, but you got really clear on some things that weren't working for you.
Yeah.
And in those quote unquote, you know, things that weren't working / failures, whatever you want to call them, you were able to then move on to a different chapter and create something different from there. So it really was that learning and experiment. So I love that. Yeah. If failure or not working or closed doors or even outright rejection was a message from the universe, what do you think it says? What's the message?
You know, there's this quote that, oh man, I'm blanking on the name of the person who said it. We'll have to Google it and you can put it in your podcast show notes or something. Okay. But the quote is, there is something inside of you that is stronger than any obstacle. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot. And I think that that's what difficult moments in our lives, rejection, criticism, failure, et cetera, is trying to show us. It's trying to show us, you know, you are a human being. You are a miracle. You are, I mean, whatever your spiritual philosophy is, like you are made from the same carbon that is in the stars in the sky. You are incredible. And there is something inside of you, inside of your heart, your gut, your spirit, that is strong enough to overcome anything, including, you know, struggling to find a client by Friday or whatever.
Right.
Like you
right.
are strong enough. And there is that indescribable, that thing, whatever the human spirit is, you've got that.
Right.
And I think that that's what these that tough moments teach us. And we'll have to find out who said that because it's a really good one.
So yeah. I had this question, which I think you kind of began to hit on. And that was, you know, I think that if we're being led by our heart, our intuition, all the, you know, our higher self, whatever name we call it, that generally speaking, we have practice that some kind of practice, and it's different for everyone, to help us keep present and disciplined and really essentially sane.
Yeah.
Do you have something like that? What is that for you?
Yeah. Okay. So I will admit I am not actually, at least right now, I'm not really the sort of person who will, you know, go sit on a cushion and meditate for 10 minutes a day, or who will, you know, I don't have practices or rituals like that exactly. I know that for a lot of people that kind of thing works super well. For me, the things that help me to connect with my hut, my heart, mm-hmm. and my gut are unplugging as much mm-hmm. as possible. You know, I made the choice a few years ago to deactivate all of my social media accounts, and that was in a very large part to clear more space in my brain and hear mm-hmm. myself think and feel. So you could look at that as a practice, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And I like to take long walks. I like to swim in the ocean. Mm. I like to sometimes just lie on the ground and like not necessarily like, you know, listen to a guided meditation on YouTube, but just lie there for a second and kind of mm-hmm. let the world stop spinning. So things like that work for me. I'm a very physical person. Like I really struggle to sit still. And so I find that I will often get my best and clearest ideas when I'm in motion, you know, when I'm at the gym, when I'm at the yoga studio, even just taking a walk. There's something about, Erin Stutland, she's an awesome kind of like dance teacher, fitness teacher gal. And she always says, movement in your body creates movement in your life.
Right.
And I find that for me, that's very true. I need to move. And that's when usually what are your practices? How do you connect with your intuition and get clear?
For me, it's a lot of silence. I crave mm-hmm. silence. And so I think that's so I do meditate. I do a lot of yoga, but unplugging and reading really, I think, is a ritual and paper reading.
Yeah, paper books. I love them.
You know, being outdoors in nature, but really it's yeah. just, they all have a similar essence, and it's that disconnection from the noise really,
right,
you know,
right.
So like getting, and for yoga, it's getting into my body versus out of my thinking mind. So all of yeah. that. And the biggest fights I have with my boyfriend are always about the sound levels in our house. You know? he's exactly the opposite. He wants the TV on all the time, and I just want yeah. dead silence. Yeah. So it's that silence so that things can whisper to me, so I can start to listen to like the whisper that's
yes.
there.
So you need to get these amazing headphones that I have that are Bose
yes.
is the company, and the wireless noise canceling Bluetooth headphones. Oh my gosh, they're amazing.
I think that's a great idea. Thank you so much for coming on and having this just fabulous conversation. What is one piece of advice that you would give people out there who are, you know, trying to pursue a creative project or endeavor, or facing failure, feeling like unsure, like, what's the one thing you would say to them?
If you're feeling unsure about a project or about your career, that type of thing?
Yes.
Trust your hut. Trust your hut. Yeah. Close your laptop, log off of Facebook, you know, step outside, lie under a tree, get quiet. Or if you're like me, move, you know, take a walk, take a swim, and just try to clear away all the noise, you know, clear away what your mentor is telling you, what your business coach is telling you, what the internet is telling you, what your mom is telling you, and just try to really ask yourself, you know, what do I want? What do I want to create in my life? What's the ripple effect I want to create? You know, what's the project that's calling to me most strongly right now? Those kinds of questions. If it was my last 24 hours, what would I want to do? Those kinds of questions, I think, can help us to get clear and certain about what's next, even if it's just what's next for the next, you know, 6 months. But that's right. My advice. And that's something that I forget to do and that I need to do more of as well.
It's moving, really. It's that shift to internal awareness.
Yeah.
It's checking in with the hut and not checking in with everyone else or going with what you think you should be doing based on what everyone else is doing or what they think you should be doing.
Yep.
Really getting cooked. Thank you so much. It was like such a pleasure. I'm super excited. And if you're listening to this, check out alexandrafranzen.com.